You're listening to a previously recorded version of Women of Grace with John Ed Williams. Please, no calls at this time.
This is Women of Grace Live, discussing issues important to your life and faith. Spiritual insight, practical wisdom. Join us as we transform the world one woman at a time. Women of Grace, for such a time as this. Now, here's your host, Johnette Williams.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to Women of Grace Live. I am Johnette Williams. So happy to be with you. You know I am. Monday through Friday, we spend this time together discussing issues of importance to your life and your faith. I'm always eager to hear from you, and we generally give you the phone numbers right here at the top of the program, but we're not going to do that today because we have a very special guest with us today, and we're going to talk about a very important topic. And every once in a while, as you know, we like to have a guest on and dig deeply into a subject area that is of grave importance to us at this moment in time. And we're going to be doing that today with our guest, Carrie Gress. She's the author of a number of books. Her most recent book is called The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us. Hey, look, all we have to do is look at the culture of the day. And we know very, very well that woman is under great attack today. The whole concept of who woman is under attack today. And quite frankly, I think that the notion of the special genius of woman, as well as her reality in terms of her physicality and her metaphysical realities, all of that is in danger of being erased, at least in the cultural mindset. Can never be erased from the mind and the heart of God, nor should it ever be sought to be erased from the cultural mindset. But that is what's going on today. And in this beautiful book, Carrie really gives us the history of this. You know, we begin to look at feminism through a relatively contemporary lens. You know, we go to the radical feminist movement that came into being in the 60s. And, Carrie's written a beautiful book also that discusses that in a great deal of detail. It's called Anti-Mary Exposed. It's a great book. I really encourage you to get all of her books. But this one, The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us, really takes us back to the roots of feminism. And I think you're going to be quite surprised to discover how deep those roots and how long those roots are. They go all the way back centuries. And she's going to give us a little bit of an historical perspective and bring us forward. And I think that that's important. You know, oftentimes we look at the noxious fruit that might be blooming at a particular moment in time. And we think that flower, that noxious fruit has just arisen. But the fact is, no. In many cases, the seeds for that have been sown and were actually very well fertilized, nurtured along, watered, and tended for hundreds of years. And that's the case with feminism. So we're going to be exploring that together today. And because we need to know, we need to be that voice of reason, that voice of truth in our day and time. We're living in a culture that's completely infatuated with deception. We've got to speak truth into that deception. We're living in a day and time where people are completely infatuated by darkness. And we've got to speak light into that darkness. And also, we're living in a day and time that, you know, is devoid really of common sense, you know, just common sense considerations. And so we want to speak reason into that lack of common sense, into that kind of void of reason that's been created in our day and time. So I'm going to be bringing Carrie on in just a few moments here, and we're going to be getting into this detail. I think that it's going to be something that you're going to really learn from and hopefully be inspired by, and even, may I use the word, incited by a little bit to get out there and to do what it's going to take to begin to reverse this trend that has become a well-ingrained rut in our social thinking today. So we're not going to be taking your calls for that reason. We're not going to be going to social media. But I do want to remind you that we've got all kinds of resources available for you at womenofgrace.com. And we've got programming that speaks to these issues. As a matter of fact, Carrie has been a guest on our television program, Women of Grace, seen Monday through Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on EWTN Television. She's been on a number of times. We interviewed Carrie on the Anti-Mary Exposed. We interviewed her on her other book, The Marian Option. We've interviewed her on the book that we're going to be talking about in our program today, The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us. You can go out there and just click on, in the navigational bar, television, put in Carrie's name, C-A-R-R-I-E, last name Gress, G-R-E-S. And up will come all of the shows. I really encourage you to watch them. And then I encourage you to order the books. We've got them for you at womenofgrace.com in our store. But EWTN's religious catalog has them too. And you can go out to EWTNRC.com and order those books. We need to know about it. Every one of us, male and female, we need to know about it. Otherwise, we can't make sense of what's going on here. Of course, it's nonsensical what's going on here, but you know what I mean. We can't put it into some kind of framework that we can begin to address or to deal with. So we want you to see what the deal is on all of that. So I'm inviting you to get out to our website, check out those television programs with Carrie, order her books. Additionally, I want to make you aware of the fact that all of our upcoming events are listed for you right there on our homepage. And of course, Sue Brinkman's New Age blog that has been so helpful to so very, very many people, inclusive of priests and exorcists and people from all around the world, really. So we invite you to take advantage of all of the resources that we've got for you right there at our website, womenofgrace.com. You know, I want to bring Carrie on right away. Usually we don't do that. We usually go to the first break, but I want to bring her on because we've got so much to discuss. I don't want to waste any more time, you know, just catching you up on stuff because we can catch you up on stuff tomorrow. But let's just welcome our guest today, Carrie Gress, as I tell you, an author of a number of books. The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us is her newest one. In addition to all of these books that she's written on topics such as this, she also has written three or four volumes, Theology of Home. I think the last volume she's written the foreword to, but she is a writer of the others. Gorgeous books. I want to tell you, they're beautiful books. I have them sitting on my coffee table. They're just nice to open up and read, and also nice to look at the absolutely glorious photography that's taken there. Carrie is a philosopher. She is a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. She's also a scholar at the Institute for Human Ecology at Catholic University of America, and she is the founder and co-editor of the online women's magazine, Theology of Home. And as I mentioned, she's a prolific author, the author of 10 books. She is a married mom. She lives in Virginia, and she has 5 children. Carrie, welcome. It's great to have you with us today.
Thanks so much for having me. It's always great to be with you.
Well, thank you so very much. And, you know, as I was saying in the intro of the program today, this is a very important topic. We look at it, as I say, through contemporary lens. But actually, as you point out to us in your book, The End of Woman, this whole business of radical feminism dates back as early as the 1700s. And, you know, if you look at its legacy, it's not a good one. So why don't you tell us about those beginning roots as we come back from our break? There's the music. I came in a little later than I thought. All of that being said, that's what we'll pick up with, Carrie, when we come back from the break. And friends, we're inviting you to stay with us. Very important topic we're discussing today with our guest, Carrie Gress, author of 10 books, including her new one, The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us, a really good book that I want for you to get. It's an important book for our day and our time, especially for women to read, but you gentlemen too, because we're all in this struggle together to preserve that which is true, that which is good, that which is beautiful. Inviting you to get onto our website, womenofgrace.com. Coming right back with our guest today, Carrie Gress. Stay with us. Welcome back, friends. You're listening to Women of Grace Live. I'm Johnette Williams. I'm delighted to be with you today. Love spending this time with you. Today, we have a special guest, so we're not taking your calls. We're not going to go out to social media. We just want you to listen up. We want you to listen up and listen intently. And then, you know, call to action. Let's do something about what it is that we hear today. Carrie Gress, our guest, is the author of 10 books. Her newest book is The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us. I was telling you before the break that I've interviewed her on this book on our television program, Women of Grace, seen Monday through Friday on EWTN television at 1 p.m. Eastern time. Wanted to bring her on radio because I'm really trying to get this book out there as broadly as I can help it to get out there. It's doing quite well. You might already have a copy, but if you don't, I want you to get a copy available for you at EWTN's Religious Catalog. That's EWTNRC.com. We have it for you also in our store. But what Carrie tells us in this book and what she does for us is she traces this history of feminism, and she tells us that it's not something that happened in the 60s. It's something that kind of became exacerbated in the 60s, but the seeds of it were planted a very long time ago. So, Carrie, take us back. Give us an historical retrospective, if you will, of the history of feminism dating all of the way back to the 1700s. That was a startling fact for me to find out, and I'm thinking it is for some of our listeners today.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was for me, too. I think when I started this book, I expected to spend maybe just a couple of days on the first wave of feminism. I had been told, like so many of us, that the first wave was really a great thing and that there was, you know, something pure about it. And that was really my expectation. And so when I started digging into it, I just couldn't believe what I was finding. Like, how do we not know this? And, the resources I used were either original resources or there were people who were very much for feminism and what had happened at that stage. So it wasn't like I was reading through a lens of people that would be biased against it. So that was the amazing thing, though, was to just see from almost the very beginning, you know, people think of Mary Wollstonecraft as the godmother of feminism, and she's writing in around the 1790s. And, you know, the first thing that she's promoting is this idea of egalitarianism and getting rid of any kind of hierarchy, getting rid of certainly monarchies, but also the church and the military. So all these ways in which kind of the masculine genius, if we can use that language, brings order to society. And so this idea of hers was really the first piece. There were three pieces that make up feminism from there on. But this was the first piece. And so she's describing that, and it gets picked up. But I think that idea really morphed into the idea of smashing the patriarchy, of trying to just crush these hierarchies. So that's the first piece. The second two pieces are actually articulated by her son-in-law. They never met because she died giving birth to her daughter, Mary, who became Mary Godwin Shelley. So Mary Shelley, you know, the name will be familiar to people. She wrote Frankenstein. But while she's writing Frankenstein, her husband, Percy Shelley, is writing about this woman called Cythna, who became kind of this idol for the feminist movement. She was this woman that she didn't have any connections with men, and she had no children. Kind of the first independent woman, if you will, of in literature and in poetry. And she did have a connection with Satan. She did have one relationship. But Shelley, of course, brings to it this whole host of the occult with Cythna. So in it, he's promoting this idea of egalitarianism that he got from his mother-in-law. He's promoting the occult that was just part of his own life. He was banished from Oxford for writing about atheism. And then he adds a third piece, which was from his father-in-law. His father-in-law was this sort of intellectual celebrity because he was very much an anarchist and believed in that monogamy was a kind of slavery. So he was trying to abolish the nuclear family and all that. So Percy Shelley takes that idea as well and sort of tucks it into this woman, Cythna, and that she became the model for all, you know, feminists thereafter, sort of wittingly or not. A lot of women already knew where the source was, but so many later on, obviously most of us don't know that's the source of it, that a man was the one that first articulated the three principles of feminism. But that's really what has come down to us, is this myth of this independent woman who doesn't need children, she doesn't need a husband, and she can, you know, have relations in any way that she wants to, just like a man. And that's really the question that I think the early feminists and Percy Shelley were asking was, how do we make women more like men? How do we give women sort of what they considered a privileged life of men? And, you know, not asking how do we help women become better women. It was really a question of how do we get rid of our fertility and how can we act like men do, really putting that up as an idol.
Yeah, you know, when you think about it, I mean, this is truly an attack against the whole reality of the feminine, because we know the way in which we're created, right? Women are created for relationship. The fact that we can contain within our body another human person, right, is indicative of that metaphysical reality that we are meant to be, this emotionally safe shelter, you know, if you want to put it that way, right? Yeah. And so I think of Edith Stein, St. Teresa Benedict of the Cross, talking about that, you know, woman only finds herself really and truly in relationship with others. She's called to maternity, whether it's physical maternity or spiritual maternity. And when you go back, you know, and you do this in your book, Carrie, when you go back and you begin to highlight the women who, you know, were the crafters of this, along with Percy Shelley, being a crafter, a man, and not only crafters, but women who began to live this ideal, none of them were happy. They had miserable lives.
Yeah. No, and that was really the focus of the first part of the book. I called it the Lost Girls, because it's all of these women who are incredibly broken, and they take this subjective experience of their brokenness and they apply it to the whole system and say, everything's broken and we have to just toss it all out, and that is what will liberate us. And, you know, I think we see this pattern in our own day and age, too, that there's always this pressure by radical feminists to erase things like tradition, erase things like the gifts of men and hierarchy in the church, and even things like the Ten Commandments, some very basic things that are the very things that structure our civilization. And now we're seeing the fruit of, obviously, what happens in the world when we get rid of these things. That's the real tragedy, is that is the instinct that happens when I think so many women are broken, and they feel like in order to fix the brokenness, they end up breaking other things without really recognizing that that's what is in fact happening.
You know, I remember years ago, a priest once told me, you know, Janet, when there's one person that's dysfunctional within a family setting or within a group, pretty soon that whole family or that group becomes dysfunctional. And so what you're sharing with us today, I think, is applicable in the sense that, you know, we have a lot of women who have bought into this, and the society, if you look at the society, it is very dysfunctional. We're living in a dysfunctional society. And I think in a large part, it has to do with this failure of women to recognize the great beauty and wonder that they are, the feminine genius that St. John Paul II talks about, how it is that we can be purveyors of that which is true, good, and beautiful in the culture and change this thing around. I think a lot of this depends upon the female person.
No, absolutely. And I, you know, going back to your point about the important role of motherhood, I mean, that's what's really been stripped from us by feminism. And I think, you know, all of us to one degree or another are really in recovery from feminism, because whether we know it or not, because of the fact that it's been so imposed on us so aggressively in every aspect of our lives, whether it's politics, Hollywood, you know, entertainment, fashion magazines, book publishing, academia, all of these areas have bought into this narrative and have told us that the way that we will be happy is if we either become workers, or if we become like men. There's a sort of similar ideas. One of them is communist, and one of them is stripped slightly from its communist roots. But that's the real problem, is we haven't said anything good about being a mother in 50 years. So it shouldn't surprise us that we think abortion is so essential, because that is the procedure that allows us to believe that we, quite mistakenly, of course, that we can be like men and that there will be an equal playing field, because it gets rid of our fertility. And so it's interesting to start looking back, or, you know, even in the early 1900s and Margaret Sanger's efforts with birth control and, of course, the pill, all of these things, you know, technology caught up with what it was that feminism was already trying to do, which was to make women infertile. So this is, you know, kind of the remarkable aspect of it, is that it's in plain sight what our gifts are and the ways in which we are meant to use them. And yet we've been so confused that we can't figure out what our bodies are for, what the meaning of them is. And, you know, this leads very, very easily into the trans movement, where young women are, you know, now very happily getting mastectomies and these kinds of surgeries to change their bodies, because they don't see the purpose behind them and a usefulness and a beauty and wonder to them that has obviously been built into us, body and soul.
You know, I love the reference to the body and soul there. I want you to talk, you know, put your philosophical hat on for a moment. I know that you have a PhD in philosophy, and I'm thinking about, you know, metaphysics in the sense of the essential nature of things, that there is an essential nature to that which God has created. The creation is not void of meaning. There's great meaning. There's great intentionality about everything. And so when we read in Genesis that God created man in his image, in the divine image, he created him, male and female, he created them. He created them with intentionality. And so that intentionality is the essential reality of their nature. And if you live contrary to that, it's never going to bring joy. It's never going to bring peace, happiness, or a sense of fulfillment, which is what these women say that they're striving to attain. So share with us a little bit, just from that perspective, Carrie, about the human person.
Yeah, no, I think it's an essential piece, and that's really what's missing and why it's such a tragedy to start really reflecting on what feminism has done in this sense of lying to us about how we're going to be happy if we become like men, instead of really recognizing the importance of what it means to be a woman and all of that relationality that you've mentioned already. And you know, I think it's really interesting. We start looking at the culture has found surrogates for the nuclear family, and one of them is now certainly pets. I mean, women long to mother others, and not in some creepy codependent way, but in a way that we care for them, we shelter them, like you mentioned before, that we nourish them and we provide for others in such a way that they can become who it is that they're meant to be. And we do that in conjunction with men, that beautiful complementarity. I was speaking the other day, just even on a, you know, the most fundamental biological level of embryology, we can see even there that the cells that a woman contributes are the nourishing cells, and the cells that the man contributes are protective cells. There's this beautiful complementarity even on that tiny cellular level. So I think there's this beauty shot through us, but we've, you know, ignored it, or we've been told that it doesn't exist, and so we don't know how to see it, perceive it, or live it out. Simultaneously, in addition to the lies that we've been told about the way that women ought to live, we've also been told that, you know, if we don't live the way that women in the culture tell us to live, then we must be a doormat, or we must be too stupid to understand, or we must be part of a fertility cult and wear red bonnets and red dresses. You know, all of this kind of misinformation is also being put out there to propagandize us so that we think it's either one way or the other, instead of really realizing, no, there's a healthy group of beautiful women who are embracing what it means to be women made the way that God intended us to be. And these are the women that we need to be following, and we need to be mentored by, and we need to be listening to, and sort of detoxing from the lies that the culture's been telling us. So it's hard to find them, but it's really important, I think, for those of us who are searching, but also for those who have the capacity to pass on this kind of wisdom and to model this kind of wisdom, to be mindful that we are mentoring others and witnessing in a really incredible, incredibly beautiful way, even in our daily lives, just being out in public or being at church or being in a school setting where people are seeing us.
Yeah, I want to talk for just a moment about the notion, because oftentimes if you get into a discussion about feminism, then mm-hmm. what people will bring up to you is this whole notion of, you know, equity feminism, you know, where, well, don't you sure. believe that women have the right to vote, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So talk with us a little bit about, you know, how that thinking really narrows the conversation in terms of the greater realities that feminism has dispersed, if you will, in a noxious way throughout our culture and our marketplace of ideas.
Yeah, no, I think it's an interesting question, and it is something that has really skewed the picture, because, of course, it tries to make men and women exactly the same. And you know, even Aristotle said, if you want to, you know, make something, do something unjustly, you will try to make two things that are different into the same. And that's the real problem. And it sounds rhetorically like a very great thing. Like, can't we just make women and men the same? They should be treated equally. We have this value, you know, or sexual blindness in the workplace and whatnot. But the problem is, of course, we're not created the same. We're complementary. We have the same dignity and equality in the eyes of God, and we should in the world, but we are made very, very differently, and we have different ends and different purposes. And so this is the tragedy of feminism, is in order to create that equality, what they've tried to do is turn us into men right now, even physically. You know, they've told us to leave the home. They've told us our husbands are a problem. Our children are an obstacle. You know, all of these kinds of things, directing us to this masculine ideal that's not even actually a good masculine ideal. It's not a good man that most people would call the good man. So, yeah, I think that's a real problem. The other reality, too, is that, you know, I know we hear a lot, we're guilted a lot into believing that we have to adopt feminism or else we're not grateful for the opportunities that we've been given. I hear this a lot, you know, just I should be grateful and stop picking on feminism because I never would have been able to get an advanced degree without it. And, you know, I think that is just a way to really cover their tracks and to make sure that nobody really pays attention to what is actually happening. And, you know, again, another set of lies for us to try to believe. But the reality is that so many things were changing simultaneously. We didn't need feminism to destroy the fundamental fabric of society in order to give women these opportunities. I mean, even if you just look at technology alone, the difference between what a woman had to do to feed her family and clean her children's and family's clothes and the 1800s is dramatically different than what I do now to feed my family and launder my clothing. You know, the time-saving things from technology are just amazing. And you also have this huge rise in the middle class. I mean, people have more time. They have more disposable income. All of these kinds of things that didn't happen in the 1800s. So I think it's sort of oranges and apples to try and say that that's at the core of it. So in any event, I think that there was so much damage that has been done by feminism that we need to really pay attention to and recognize that these things didn't have to happen for women to be made equal in the way that we would like them to be.
Absolutely. Our guest today, Carrie Gress, we're talking about her latest book, The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us. Fascinating conversation, friends. We're not taking calls today, as I shared with you earlier in the program, nor are we going out to social media. I really want to dig into this topic with Carrie through the course of the rest of our program, hoping that you'll stay tuned, and we're inviting you to get out to our website, womenofgrace.com. Coming right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, friends. You're listening to Women of Grace Live. I'm Johnette Williams. Very happy to be with you today. We are visiting with Carrie Gress. She is a prolific author. She is the author of 10 books. We're talking about her most recent book. That book is called The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us. I want you to know that it's available for you through booksellers everywhere. I always recommend you get to EWTNRC.com, order it there, or at our website, womenofgrace.com. We have it for you in our store as well. We encourage you to get a copy of the book. It is reading, I think, that is going to be eye-opening for so many. And I do want to say, this is reading that really should be mandatory in our Catholic homes, especially for our daughters who are teenagers and college students, because the diatribe that they're receiving in public education today, and unfortunately in some of our Catholic education, as well as in our universities, is anti-woman. At its core, it is absolutely anti-woman. We want for them to know the beauty that is theirs by way of their gift of authentic femininity. We want them to operate in it. I personally think that that's the solution to much of what we see in our day and time. So Carrie is talking with us about a very, very important topic. Again, you can get her book at booksellers everywhere. I like to send you to EWTNRC.com or our website, womenofgrace.com. You know, when we went to the break there, Carrie, we were talking about the history of radical feminism and how it's rooted far deeper into history than we might initially expect to find it. 1700s is when it first started. You shared with us about that. I want to advance it forward because it seemed to reach, especially in contemporary times, a type of zenith. You know, I think it was the 60s that really seemed to topple the apple cart, you know, and began just this flood of ideology that is so, in its essence, as I mentioned before, just anti-woman. It's anti-feminism. It's not feminism in a healthy sense.
Yeah. And I think, you know, going into the 1960s, the first person that we have to deal with, of course, is Betty Friedan and her book, The Feminine Mystique. And, it, you know, Betty Friedan tried to pass herself off for most of her life as just a stay-at-home mom who wasn't really interested in politics or anything related to feminism until the 1950s. And, there's a startling book written by a friend of hers that just exposes all of that. I mean, he was fascinated because he thought, here's this communist who was able to skirt McCarthyism and still get her message out. And that's what The Feminine Mystique was a very communist book that she wrapped in this packaging of psychology. And so it didn't feel like you're reading Marx and Engels. And in fact, you are. So the 3 million copies that she was able to sell of that book in the first few years of its publication really are a Marxist manifesto, where she's trying to convince women that they need to leave the home, because she firmly believed, based on Engels' writing, that women could only be happy if they were doing productive work outside the home. So we know this ideology. I mean, it's also Hitler's ideology. It's that idea of work sets you free. You know, that's when the gates at Auschwitz say that in German, Arbeit macht frei, that work makes us free. And so that was really what kicked it off in such a radical and dramatic way. And again, she used this incredible psychology to make women feel like they were missing out on something or that they were victims. And this is, that Marxist idea too, where men suddenly are automatically an oppressor and the woman is the oppressed. So this is the first seeds of what we now know to be the woke culture, where people are automatically labeled an oppressor and or a victim based on which status or characteristics you may have, arbitrary and accidental characteristics as well. So that's what really started that. And then, of course, that just got exacerbated because you've got women like Kate Millett and Angela Davis who came along in the later 60s and 70s and were really promoting these ideas of the new left, which was the recognition that you can destroy the culture if you can promote sexual deviancy among families, among men, among young people, that is the best way to really destroy the nuclear family and the fabric of the community. And that's really what they pushed. So you can see, Kate Millett was on the front cover of Time magazine with her book called Sexual Politics, which was just loaded with all of these ideas. And they were very big proponents of the sexual revolution. Millett was a promoter of abortion. She believed it was a woman's duty to be able to kill her own child because, men killed innocent people in Vietnam. Soldiers killed innocent people. So women should be able to do the same thing. So you can really see how deeply distorted all of this was back, when you start looking at those original sources. And I think it's, much of it's been sugared over, polished over. But then it sort of rears its head, especially with the trans issue, because one of the main focuses was to really get rid of gender entirely. They didn't want men, women be called men and women anymore. They wanted to abolish those concepts. And that's what's happened with the trans movement. It's all grown out of those notions and ideals. So none of this is new that we're experiencing. It all has these, incredible roots that, like I said, have been glossed over, but are certainly there and have animated the movement, up to the current moment that we're living in.
Yeah. When you look at what we're seeing today and you look at those roots, you can see how this definitely is this is the result and condition of that. All of it seems to be coming to, the negative fruition. We would say negative fruition that these people, were envisioning, right? This doesn't portend great things for society. And so that's what we see. We see the breakdown of everything, breakdown of the family, the breakdown of the reality of woman. We can't even define woman today, or, it's taboo to try to define the sexes. We find ourselves in this woke culture where anything that I want, totally self-indulgent, anything that I want, I should be able to have, even if I have to steal it or harm others to get it, because there is no moral truth. There is something, haven't thought about it enough to really articulate it very well, but there is something about denying reality, that erodes moral truth. Obviously, if you're denying reality, you're denying truth. But I mean, it has a negative impact on our ability to determine what is right, what is wrong, what is good, what is not good, what is true, what is false.
Yeah. Well, and I think we're in a stage where we've moved beyond reason, too. I think we're operating fundamentally off of emotions and impulses and desires. And so that's partially what's feeding it, is that it then becomes, everything becomes turned in, and, you know, people become very narcissistic. And it just is a question of, what is it that I want, and how do I get what I want? You know, it's a spoiled child. And in the meantime, those around us whom we're meant to be in an ordered relationship with, whether it's, you know, men or children, you know, that chasm gets wider and deeper because of the fact that those relationships are not in right order. They're, the focus becomes about the woman or about her career or whatever she wants. And everybody else is just sort of supposed to go along with it because this is what the culture has told us, that we can have it all. So, yeah, I think it's incredibly tragic. I think there's also huge ramifications for men. You know, I've called feminism really kryptonite for men. I think, you know, I know my own experience, just if I tell people that if I tell men I write about feminism, you know, that's an instant conversation ender, because no man wants to talk about feminism. And I don't blame them. But I think that that's just a remarkable thing to have seen, is that they have been utterly silenced by feminism. And so the natural authority that they have, that God-given authority that they have, to use their gifts in this society, that's completely been taken out at the knees. And this is one of the reasons why feminism has proliferated so much, because men, they don't like fighting with women, or they've gotten to a point where they're just afraid to say something because it never ends well. So this coupled with that idea that women, you know, believe all women and women aren't wrong, has really led to women behaving in ways that they don't actually even have the feedback that they should normally have from the people around them that love them, because feminism has created all these ways to silence them. So it's really sad. The guardrails are gone.
I go back to the garden again. You know, I go back to that beautiful moment that we read about in Genesis 2, where God takes, you know, the rib from Adam, and out of that rib, he creates woman. And Adam comes out of his deep sleep and he sees her and he says, "At last, this is bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. You shall be called woman, for out of your man you have been taken." And then scripture goes on and says, "This is why a man leaves his father and mother and clings to his wife, and the two become one flesh." And the beautiful thing about this is that right there, at the dawn of human civilization, we find the beauty and the wonder of the complementarity of male and female, but also the specialized charisms of each. You know, he finds himself in her. Woman has the capacity to bring to life, right? Obviously, her body speaks to that through her reproductive system, the human person entrusted to her, but also to bring out of the human person that which is greatest about them, which brings new life to them. A mother does this with her children. You know, I watched yesterday as my youngest grandchild took some items that he had there. He's just three, no, not quite three, and he made the shape of an S, and he said, S, right? And oh my goodness, you know, my daughter fussed over him, and his little face beamed, right? That was life for that child, right? Woman has that capacity, and she has that capacity for the man too, to hold up to him that everything that is true and good and wonderful about him, and he's called to protect her and to provide for her and to lead her, to bring order into the chaos of the world caused by original sin, to make sense of it so that she has a safe habitat. And I mean that safe not only in the physical reality, but also in the emotional and the spiritual reality, the psychological reality. So, you know, all of that, you know, is there. So you see that right at the dawn. And it's sad today, because what we're seeing is women trying to be something they can never be. They will never be a man. They cannot be a man. And you see men who have capitulated to this demasculinizing of them, you know, this making them effeminate. And I don't mean that necessarily just in the sexual means. I mean, you know, they can't think like a man anymore because they're confused because woman is not modeling what they're supposed to be about, you know?
Yeah. No, it's so confusing. I think, you know, it's this bizarre schizophrenia where women say, you know, we want to be just like you. In fact, we're better at it than you are.
Right.
But we also want you to become like us, you know, by getting rid of this toxic masculinity. So it's incredibly confusing. And I think one of the best things that we can do is, you know, I love the articulation that you just gave from Genesis, because the message that we have is so beautiful. It's so profound. There's so much wonder there. And we just haven't done a good job of presenting it. And mm-hmm. you know, the culture has been destroyed through strong visuals, whether it's TV or television or magazines or these different ways in which the left has really gotten its message around our rational thinking and in, you know, via emotions, like the Barbie movie, for example, is a perfect example of it. Like, that's a very anti-masculine film, but, you know, you add a lot of pink and some cute hairdos and suddenly people think it's great, you know? So it's amazing to me, though, that, you know, we do have this incredible message, and I think it's very hopeful. We just have to start presenting it afresh and in ways that women actually can absorb the content, instead of just writing about it. And, you know, this is one of my goals with my books, is I wanted them to be very accessible and not academic. I wanted any woman to pick them up and be able to read them instead of it being, you know, locked in a dusty archive somewhere in a library without anybody able to access it. So I think this is the call in the church, is to make things beautiful again and make them compelling with our own messaging, because our own messaging really hits something deep in the heart of women when they see it. They just haven't seen it enough. So that's one of the reasons why Noelle Mehring and I have been so involved with writing our books, that's Theology of Home, and certainly our blog with the same name, is to try and help women have these intellectual hooks where they can understand what it looks like to be a real woman.
Yes.
Instead of just sort of grasping at what the culture is providing, because it's not providing anything healthy or solid or real or beautiful. So we've got our work cut out for us to try and help women understand that, I think, in the culture today.
And this is one of the reasons why I'm so keen on promoting what you and Noelle do, and promoting your books in particular, because they are accessible. They're not academic books. Why I mentioned that, I think that these books are readable for high school girls and college girls, and yet also for the adult or mature woman. She's not going to be, you know, bored by reading them. There's no way you can be, you know, feeling as though these are beneath you in any way, but they're very, very accessible. And you know, the work that we do at Women of Grace, Carrie, that is the whole purpose, is to help women understand who she is. Because I thoroughly am convinced that if we can help women understand, man takes his orders from her in the sense that he finds himself in her. He locates himself in her. We see that at the dawn of human civilization. And, you know, if she is rightly directed, then I think society is going to find a balance again. And there is hope. So I want to talk a little bit about that, because this is a yeoman's job. You know, it just as there were these people who, you know, negatively impacted the future of women 300 years ago, we would like to impact the future of women and not have it take 300 years to change. I'm not sure where we would end up. We would end up with a completely androgynous society and children being, you know, conceived in test tubes and nurtured in artificial wombs, which is happening at this point in time. You know, talk with us about that. I mean, we find the ideal also in sacred scripture. You know, we find the ideal woman and the ideal man in sacred scripture, our Blessed Lady and our Lord Jesus Christ. They're the ideal, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's the other exciting element, is that as the church, we have so many examples of amazing women. I mean, if you think about just think of five female saints, and none of them will be the same. They all have just these amazing distinctive characteristics but at the same time, we're still very feminine, very much a woman, very ordered. But they had different callings and vocations and ways in which they were called to express those gifts. And, you know, that's what we have to sort of rail against, is this idea that if we start embracing our femininity, that somehow we become cookie cutters. And, you know, the exact opposite happens when we are living with God, is that we become more interesting and more unique. And so I think that that's an exciting, you know, exercise, is just to even start looking at the lives of the saints. But that puts us as Catholics in you know, ahead of the game, because we have all these examples. I think even looking at the life of women religious, there's a reason why the Mother Superior is called Mother, because, you know, again, it's just on that spiritual level, she's mothering others. So that's another important aspect that I think that we need to really pay attention to and pray about and just chew on, because there's so much there that can really then affect our own lives on a daily basis, but also the lives of our children and husbands and colleagues and also all those that we come into contact with.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your solution. And, you know, as we set up this, the problem here, obviously it's one that is quite visible in our day and time. It doesn't take much head scratching to find it. It's right there in front of us being lived out and acted out in our streets and in our classrooms and our university settings, in our social media, in our politics. But, you know, your book, The Marian Option, I think, offers us the solution. You know, we're talking about returning to the reality of who we are and allowing that to impact the day and time in which we live through the various avenues that God gives us, whether that's, you know, vocationally or whether it's through gifts and talents or, you know, the milieu in which we find ourselves socially. We're called to bring that into the public square and to live that reality. But the Marian Option helps us to do that, I think.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, I wrote the Marian Option, obviously, in sort of reaction to Rod Dreher's book, The Benedict Option. And because, simply put, Our Lady has been much more involved in restoring and recreating culture than anyone. I mean, other than maybe St. Michael. I think it's fascinating to do research on the first millennia of Christianity. And there are a lot of ways in which St. Michael the Archangel is much more involved. A place like Mont Saint-Michel in France, that was inspired by St. Michael. But then the second millennium comes around, and everything seems to be connected to Our Lady, whether it's Our Lady of Guadalupe, whether it's the reconquest of Spain, whether it's the Battle of Lepanto, all these different ways in which Our Lady has had her hand on Christians, trying to restore culture, trying to bring health and beauty back to the church, restoring it to what it's meant to be, and you know, restoring civilization. So, yeah, I think that she, you know, offers the best way for us to do that, and it's not complicated. It is that, you know, something very simple like a Marian consecration and praying the rosary daily, that these are the ways in which we can open ourselves up to letting her direct our lives in a way that, you know, she sees all the pieces. She knows how it is that we fit into the puzzle, and she knows what God has intended for our lives. And so when we surrender ourselves to this amazing mother, she will mother us and you know, help us to become, you know, just what mothers do, help us to become the person that God created us to be on this incredible adventure of life that, you know, happens when you start following her.
Yeah. Yeah. I look at our Blessed Mother and, you know, she certainly is the feminine ideal. I like to say, you know, what is the feminine genius? And we use a lot of attributes and virtues to describe what the feminine genius is. But I like to look at it, who is the feminine genius? The feminine genius is the Blessed Virgin Mary, completely surrendered to God, doing His will, living out the reality of who she was called to be. And I think oftentimes we give short shrift to our mother. We want to make her into, you know, just a plaster of Paris statue. But Our Lady was real flesh and blood. She had true grit in a way in which we as women today, I don't even think can begin to comprehend. She was strong. She was indefatigable. She was soft and tender. She was all of that. And that is who woman is in her essence.
Yeah. No, and I think that is, you know, I know it was a challenge for me, and I think it's a challenge for a lot of us, is how do we wrap our minds around who it is that she really is? Because it, oftentimes, again, we think of her as just very saccharine or overly pious or just inapproachable. And, you know, I go through that in the Anti-Mary Exposed about how we can start understanding her in the midst of the deepest desires of our hearts, and recognize that she had those same desires and how it is that she lived those out. Many of those are what you have already described so beautifully. So, yeah, yes. She's certainly the model, the place to start and to finish.
Well, and thank you, Carrie, so much for being with us today. I mean, and friends, I just really want to encourage you to get that trilogy of books, The Marian Option, The Anti-Mary Exposed, and Carrie's newest book, The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us. As I said, Theology of Home, all of the volumes sit right there on my coffee table in our living room. And I encourage you to take a look at those. Get out to her blog, Theology of Home, also to the beautiful offerings that they have that you can purchase. Carrie, it's been wonderful being with you. Thank you so much for all that you do. I look forward to the next book.
Thanks so much, Donna.
God bless you now. Bye-bye. God bless all of you, my dear friends. Bye-bye now.